You are listening to Badass in Heels, a podcast for everyone who's ever wondered what it's like to be a woman in the FBI. And now your host, retired supervisory special agent, Nancy Aguilar.
Hi, welcome to Badass in Heels. I'm Nancy, and you're listening to episode number 19. In the end of November 2023, I was invited to participate as a counterterrorism advisor representing ECTAP, the International Criminal Investigative Training Assistance Program, Empower, engaging multinational police women on equality and rights in Croatia. It was a humbling experience to be among extraordinary law enforcement women and men from the Balkans and Ukraine. I was proud to have been part of a training program whose mission is to train, advance, and elevate law enforcement women across the globe. The recruitment efforts of women in policing is clearly visible here in the United States through initiatives such as 30 by 30, which aims to increase the number of law enforcement women recruits nationwide to 30% by 2030. And I thought it was important for everyone to know that similar efforts are also being undertaken overseas and led by the Department of Justice and the Department of State. So, in honor of International Women's Day, I invited five phenomenal women who are dedicated to Empower and who will talk to us about the program. With us today are Grace Mason, Ivana Brennan, Lynn Holland, Vanessa Duboulay, and Suki Gomathinayaham. Welcome to Badass in Heels. We'll kick the episode off with Grace Mason, who is the current program manager for the U.S. Department of State Bureau of Counterterrorism Office of Programs. Grace is responsible for portfolios related to Central Asia and women, peace, and security. Grace has a Bachelor of Arts in Leadership and Public Policy. Prior to joining the Department of State, Grace served as a Cora Fellow in Public Affairs. She worked issues ranging from the Afghan relocation effort after the fall of Kabul to the Taliban in the fall of 2021, and she worked in modernizing the department's communications and contact management systems. I met Grace during my trip to Croatia, where it was clear to me that she is a tremendous advocate for Empower. Before we talk about the Empower program, let's get to know Grace. Grace? Welcome to Badass in Heels.
Hi, Nancy. Thank you so much for having us today. It is an honor to be here. And I have to say, I'm a huge fan of the Badass in Heels podcast. And in preparation for this episode, I listened to every episode. As mentioned, my name is Grace Mason. I'm a program manager in the Bureau of Counterterrorism. I work on women, peace, and security and Central Asia. I am a contractor right now, but hope to convert to a federal employee sometime soon. I was born in Arlington, Virginia, so consider DC and the Northern Virginia area home, but also was raised in Roanoke, Virginia, so Southwestern Virginia is also near and dear to my heart, and then went to school in Central Virginia at the University of Virginia, so I'm a Virginia girl through and through. The important things about me and my background is I joke that the best thing to ever happen to me was be born into the Mason family. I have a very tight-knit family unit with my mom, my dad, baby brother, not so baby anymore. And I really can't thank them enough for their love and support. I wouldn't be here without them. The thing I really want to impart is my mom was a huge inspiration for me. She was in public service her entire life. She's worked for the Department of the Interior, the Department of Justice, the Senate. She was on Roanoke City Council. And ever since I was little, she really inspired culture of public service. And she was dedicated to making our city, our country, our state a better place. She would do this again, from serving on city council to literally chasing people down if they put a cigarette out of their window and littered. She would actually follow them in her car. So she was a huge champion for public service and protecting, you know, our natural resources. The other thing she really did a good job of when I was growing up is she made me aware of gender inequalities at a very young age. And she would do it in such a way that I didn't even realize at that time she was teaching me about things like inequality. So instead, she would bring up the movie we were watching. Did it pass the Bechdel test? Did two female characters speak to one another about something other than a man during that entire movie? She would point these things out at, so then I would notice, hey, there's no female superheroes, or all of the characters here that actually solve crimes are men. And she would make me aware that it's not all right that the movie industry portrays women in one way or another. So all of this to say, I wouldn't be here without my family, especially my mom and her truly feminist approach to all things in the Mason family household.
Thanks, Grace. Wonderful. I love that you are very family oriented. And of course, you know, your mom was, like you said, your inspiration and motivation, right, to continue and follow her steps. And you said something that I think is really important, which is awareness. I think in the 70s, it was customary to see the men having the lead role for everything and women just stayed home and cleaned or cooked, you know, and took care of the kids. So I think it's really great what she did by making you realize and notice little things, you know, about the role of women in society and how we belong in better places. And we, in fact, thrive in just like men do in everything, right? So very wonderful. So you're growing up with this mindset of, I want to also be like my mom and serve the public and, of course, empower women. So how do you decide as a teenager going to college, this is it?
Yeah, it's sort of a funny story how I got to where I am now. I went into college, yes, with all this wonderful background from my mother, but assuming I was going to go into business with a Spanish concentration, I thought that was sort of my way in the world. I needed to go make money. So I got to University of Virginia, and I wasn't able to get into the Spanish class that I wanted. So instead, I asked the orientation leader at the time, sign me up for Farsi, put me in a language class because University of Virginia requires a language, put me in a language that I can get into, and then I'll switch into Spanish once I have a chance. And the first week I decided, you know, maybe I'll just stop by that Farsi class and see what it's like. And it absolutely changed my life. I was embraced by a group of young Iranian American students that were so excited to have me in their class and really encouraged me to stay. So they would write the words phonetically in English when I didn't quite understand the alphabet, and they would study with me and really open my eyes to a new culture, a new world. And then that prompted me to study international relations, really focus on public policy and want to go into IR. So again, started in Spanish, ended up in Farsi, and couldn't have been happier that that's the way it worked out.
Wonderful. So do you speak Farsi?
Kami. Just a little, as you would say, Nancy, un poquito. Not as much as I speak Spanish.
But it's funny how, you know, life, you have a thing in your head, this is what I want to do, and the trajectory changes, right? So how do you eventually make it to the Department of State in 2020?
So my first job at the department was teaching a technology platform. I was recruited by a subcontractor on LinkedIn, strangely enough. And my first day at the department was actually the day COVID shut everything down, March 16th, 2020. So instead of donning my suit and going to the department, I went home for 5 months. So that was certainly interesting. So again, I got into the department teaching technology. It was not a passion of mine, but I wanted to be at the department. And then it was summer 2021, and there was a call for volunteers for then the Afghan task force, because Kabul was undergoing a change falling to the Taliban, and the department needed people to help. So I was aggressive about volunteering for this task force. I was the first person to submit my name to go to the task force, and I followed up with my company's leadership on a daily basis to make sure I was the one they selected to go to the department and work on the task force. once I got to the task force, I never looked back. I worked incredibly hard to prove I was a valuable addition to the team, talked to my company's leadership and the leadership of the task force to be allowed to stay permanently. So as soon as I got on the Afghan effort, I never went back because the work was so meaningful and important. So the task force became something called the CARE team, or the Coordinator for Afghan Relocation Effort team. I served on the CARE team for about 18 months and I worked communications. This included responding to congressional inquiries, managing advocate relationships, and working with resettlement agencies to answer their questions. The thing that inspired me the most was being able to support the then senior advisor for women and girls on the Afghan relocation effort team, Stephanie Foster. And I can't say enough good things about working with Stephanie or the work that we did while we were on this team together. We worked on getting specific cases moved along the pipeline, so women and girls out of Afghanistan or their processing platforms. We implemented protection standards at the platforms to ensure there were robust systems in place for the women during transit, and many, many more things, engaging with the public on how this relocation process works. So while I was on the CARE team, I met someone who was on the CT programs team and offered a interview or a potential opportunity once I was complete with the Afghan work. So after I had enough, about 18 months there, I decided it was time to transition and came to CT.
That's a great story, Grace. Thanks for sharing with us. You mentioned your efforts with the Afghan relief and the relocation. And of course, we never really think about all the struggle and ordeals that women and girls might be going through being relocated, being separated, coming to a new place. You know, especially girls are going through so many changes. So I'm glad something like that exists. And that's probably a conversation you and I can have another day. So having worked with that program, right, women and girls, I guess sets the foundation because now you're continuing to work for the elevation of women. So what can you tell us about your journey into the CT program and Empower?
Great question. The first week I joined the CT team was actually the last week of the woman who was previously managing the Empower program. So during my first week on the new job, I made a request to my team leadership that I manage two portfolios, Central Asia, which was the regional portfolio I was assigned to, and I asked to take on all of the Women, Peace, and Security programs in that portfolio. So I asked, and luckily they granted my request that first week, half because I was so eager and half because they needed someone to do it. So again, right place, right time, and really making it clear that this is something I wanted, something I was excited about, and showing that I could do both the portfolio they assigned me and more work on women, peace, and security.
So is this around 2022 or what year would it just start?
May 2023. So just last year, it's been a little bit over 9 months since I've been with CT.
Okay. And did the Empower program exist before or was it created also around that time?
The Empower program started in Kenya in 2019 when an all-female SWAT team was needing some additional training and support. So our then director at the time had the great idea to start the Women, Peace, and Security program there that has then expanded to over 29 countries. To introduce the Empower program, very sort of a high-level overview, it aims to increase the participation of women in counterterrorism law enforcement by providing training, mentorship, and other networking and programming opportunities. So at the very sort of baseline of the program, the goal is to, for lack of a better word, empower women.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. You just said it, right? Empower is for women. But in Croatia, we also had men attendees. So what is the benefit for men? Why should men be part of Empower?
Men are definitely encouraged to be part of the Empower program. It is a program that will not succeed without our male allies, because often in the places that we work, women are not at the table. They don't have a seat. And so we need like-minded male allies to bring them to the table. So for Empower trainings, we aim for around 80% women, 20% men, if possible. So we are targeting majority women, but we're very aware that we need our male allies there and we want them at the table to help us.
I agree with you. You know, of course, having been in the bureau is the same thing. Your top leaders, most of them are male, and there's a few females. It's really competitive. And I think men are our champions. They have to be our champions, and they have to be mentors. Their support is extremely important for us to be able to be at the same level and do the same things and get promoted, etc. So you mentioned Central Asia. Empower is global, but where does it operate right now?
The Empower program is global in that it has, right now, it's congressionally notified to operate in 29 countries. This year, we are hoping to expand to over 40 countries, again, pending congressional approval. And this is really exciting because it shows that there is both a need for the program and that the program's working, because there wouldn't be this demand signal if it wasn't working. I also want to highlight, we have a few bilateral offshoots of the global program, meaning the program has worked so well in a few of these countries that we have an agreement between us and the country itself. So in Kenya, Jordan, and the WHA region, we also have bilateral agreements in addition to the global program. So there's a lot going on in the Empower world, and I hope that we only continue to grow, add countries, and grow our team.
Me too. So what would you say, Grace, do you love the most about your current role in the Department of State's CT program?
I absolutely love working at the State Department. I get a little kick out of it every single time I get to badge into the Harry S. Truman Building, and it truly is an honor to serve. And especially, it's an honor to serve as a national security practitioner who gets to protect the safety and the security of American citizens through countering terrorism. I think the thing that I like the most is the freedom and sort of leeway I'm given to design creative programs, implement them in country, and make macro level decisions that hopefully will have a positive impact on all of the citizens of the countries we work in, but especially the women. So the fact that I feel like I'm able to have an impact on women around the globe every day for my job is absolutely the best thing about it. And I hope it's something that I get to continue doing for a very long time.
Thank you, Grace. Your passion clearly shows, and I'm sure your mom is very proud of you.
Thank you, Nancy.
All right. So now we're going to hear from the amazing women, some of the advisors and other program managers who travel the world empowering women in law enforcement. These ladies are personally furthering ECTAP Empower's mission and redefining police women globally. Ivana, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Nancy. Thank you for having us on today. I think, like Grace said, I'm a big fan. I've listened to a lot of the episodes, so it's really an honor to be with you today.
So nice to have you on, and I'm really looking forward to hearing your story and for our listeners to be able to learn about you and all the other ladies that will be on following you. So Ivana, you joined ECTAP in 2015, and you currently serve as the Deputy Assistant Director for the ECTAP Global Programs and Women, Peace and Security Unit. Your role is to supervise a team of program officers while coordinating and implementing dynamic headquarters-driven global programs to include the Empower program. Throughout your tenure with DOJ ECTAP, you have been responsible for complex portfolios in the Balkans to include Albania, Armenia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Croatia, Montenegro, Serbia, and you've also stood up the global program at Women in Peace and Security Units. Prior to joining ECTAP, you worked for the Save the Children as a member of the Humanitarian Policy and Advocacy Team, where you conducted research related to the impacts of violent conflict on children and advocated for greater protections and resources for refugee and internationally displaced children. You have a master's degree in international affairs from the Elliott School at the George Washington University and a Bachelor of Arts in International Studies and Political Science from Towson University. Ivana, let's get to know you a little more. I read in your bio that you were foreign born and you were born in Bosnia and Herzegovina. At what age did you emigrate from Bosnia and Herzegovina?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I was born right as the war in Yugoslavia broke out. And in 1997, through a joint IOM-UNHCR resettlement program, we were selected to move to the United States. And so I was 5 years old at the time when we arrived here.
I guess since you were only five, do you have any recollections of life in Bosnia?
Yeah, truthfully, I don't remember much before moving to the United States because I was so young. And the pieces that I do remember, I'm not always clear on if they're my own memories or stories that I've put together. There's not much there. Growing up, I was very kind of skittish, afraid of loud noises, you'd say. And so the only kind of connection to that was just being in the war and there being air raids going off and sirens and all the time. And I think that maybe left an impact on me. But unfortunately, otherwise, I don't have much there.
So would you say then, of course, coming here, you easily adapted to the United States?
Yes and no. I think I had the benefit of coming when I was so young. So learning English, I had the opportunity to do that at the young age. I do remember being very young and being out on a playground like with other kids and not being able to communicate. And in my memory, the kids started laughing. They could have just been laughing because I, who knows what, but I remember a sense of shame not speaking the language. And so with school and everything, I was part of the English as a second language program, and that really helped. And I do remember, I think, watching my parents interact too with individuals. And even after they learned English, they still speak with an accent and sometimes are treated differently as a result of that. So I think that left an impression, but really my parents did an incredible job of making sure that I was never really missing out on anything. But I also saw how hard they worked and at times struggled, I would say, to start a new life here without any family, without a support system, not knowing the language, literally starting from the ground up. But it's like so many other immigrant families who I think have helped build our country into what it is today. So it's a really unique feeling, I think, growing up in the United States in so many ways. I feel fully American. I've been here since a young age, but there's still pieces of me that don't quite make sense. But when I go visit my family overseas, I very clearly don't belong there either because I didn't grow up there. And I am American to them. So the question is then, so where do I belong? Like, where is the spot that I fit in? But in some ways, I think we're all kind of searching for that. It's not just unique to me. So a long answer to a short question, Nancy.
No, thanks for sharing, because there are so many, I'm an immigrant too, right? There are so many immigrants here that sometimes feel all alone. And it's good for them to hear the stories that they're not, it's not just them, right? It happens to all of us. You know, as a child coming so young, like you're saying, you might have little snippets of memories and it's some things might impact us. Like you were mentioning the laughing part, right? And it's just something that you take with you and it can help you grow and be resilient. But if you're not a strong person, it could also be detrimental, right? So it's
absolutely,
it's something really that I think as a society, we need to be mindful of, you know, and learn to accept people's accents, different cultures, and be respectful. I mean, it's like when Americans travel to Paris, right? They get to feel what most of us feel here. Like my ex-husband still laughs at me sometimes of my accent when I say headquarters. And I'm like, I think I'm saying it right. But he's like, headquarters. I'm like, I don't say headquarters. But whatever. And then I'm like, well, I speak Spanish, French, and Arabic, so.
Right, take your pick.
Yeah, take your pick. No, but thanks for sharing your story. And obviously, you grew to be a very resilient and successful woman. And I know it's also important to recognize our parents, right?
Absolutely.
Because it's really difficult for them coming as adults to try to assimilate to this country and try to make it, right? And try to provide so that our children have a better life. So that's something that's something to be very proud of your parents for all the hard work they did. So you and I were talking the other day about some of your hobbies and your passions, and one of them is dance. Can you talk to us briefly about dancing and being a choreographer?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a really important part of my life for a long time. I grew up dancing at a rec council up in Baltimore, Maryland. I had some of my closest friends there from early elementary school all the way up through high school, and then I stayed local for college. So I started as an assistant teacher in high school and then went on to become choreographer and eventually an associate director at the rec council, and getting to be involved in some of the leadership decisions. And it was just fantastic. I really enjoyed it. Definitely one of my passions. I think the best part was seeing our classes and our students work so hard and then putting together a final product on stage that they were proud of. And you can see their confidence grow throughout the year. And I was never the best dancer. I was never destined for greatness or, you know, Broadway, but really getting to connect and establish relationships. We started with kids as young as 4 and 5. And we would work with them throughout the year. And by the end of the year, they would be able to put on 3 different numbers in a show. So it taught me a lot about kids and young people being underestimated, for one, in terms of how much they can do and how important it is for them to have somebody in their lives that encourages them and gives them the confidence to be able to step on stage and just be the best version of themselves, even if it's just for those 2 minutes, regardless of what else is going on in their life.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
I agree with you that confidence is very important. And if you can instill it through dance and something fun, you know, it's great. And you're having fun too.
100%.
So Ivana, how do you go from, you know, dancing and becoming an instructor, a choreographer instructor, to studying international affairs, saving children?
Yeah. There's definitely a shift there. I joke that, you know, my passion for dance didn't have the talent to match, you know, so I had to shift my focus. But no, in all seriousness, I think that being able to work in international development is also something that's always fueled me. When I started college, I think like a lot of people, I was trying to figure out who I was. And for me, part of that meant making sense of the war in Yugoslavia and what happened in Bosnia and what resulted in me being in the United States, basically. With that, I think I also wrestled with ideas about justice. What does justice look like in the context of war and in violent conflict? How are those responsible held accountable? So I started studying first political science and international affairs, like you mentioned, and then had a little bit of psychology woven into it to see if I could, you know, make it all make sense to me.
Absolutely. I mean, it makes sense that that's the path. I know. Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, I didn't want to say that word, but it makes sense that that's the path that you chose. So let's talk a little bit about your role with Save the Children.
Yeah, I think that the organization itself, I was really eager to see a humanitarian assistance in action. I wouldn't be where I am today without the existence of organizations like Save the Children. And I think that's really what motivated me to join organizations who have individuals putting themselves at risk in war zones and conflict-affected countries, working tirelessly to protect and save others, ultimately at great sacrifice to themselves and their own families, for children like me and families like mine. So, and some of them make the ultimate sacrifice. I think we hear about that, you know, in the news frequently with the conflicts that are going on today. And that's an organization that I wanted to be a part of. And so it was a privilege to be able to work with them when I did.
Thanks, Ivana. Thanks for sharing that. I think we all have our way of processing, coping, and growing from those experiences. And it is amazing how you decided to give back, right? That event in your life will make you want to do something similar for children. It's wonderful what you did and what you continue to do now with women in Empower. So how do we go from working with Save the Children to the Empower?
So the time with Save the Children was really special to me. I think that it was my first professional experience, and I had the opportunity to be part of an incredibly dynamic all-female team at the time. And the team was really small, but very mighty. And in any given week, we were grappling with incredibly challenging issues impacting kids. So at the time, that was around 2014-ish. So we were dealing with, you know, the conflict in Syria and Iraq, the Ebola outbreak in West Africa, civil war in South Sudan, famine in Somalia, conflict in Ukraine. Just the sheer number of crises was overwhelming to me stepping into it for the first time. But seeing the fervor on the team and the resolve with which they tackled each issue was really inspiring. And I knew we couldn't stop the bombs from falling, right? But we were going to do everything in our power to make sure that we were giving a voice to the voiceless, to those kids and those families, and advocating for their protection. So that was my first kind of entry into trying to use my voice and my platform to help others. Like you said, I think that I'm truly privileged to be in the position that I am, largely thanks to my parents. There's no reason why I was any more special than any other kid that grew up in that conflict and that didn't get the same chance. So that I take that with me everywhere I go. Mm-hmm. And I think that I could talk about probably the full length of the podcast, why organizations like Save the Children are so important. I already mentioned they're putting themselves on the front lines every day to do what they do. And not just that, but without them, we wouldn't be able to get accurate reporting of what's going on in real time. Mm-hmm. And without accurate reporting, there's no way to hold perpetrators accountable. So I think that furthered my desire to go deeper into the realm of justice and what justice looks like and how I can contribute in that sense too. So in 2015, I joined Department of Justice at ISITAP through a Pathways internship program. And after initial conversation with the director at the time, because of my background, I was able to join the Europe-Eurasia team. And my initial portfolio consisted of Serbia, Bosnia-Herzegovina, and Croatia. And that was really special for me because all three of those countries still had a piece of my heart in a lot of ways. And the majority of my family still lives in one of those three countries. And if there wasn't a war when I was born, I might still be living in one of those countries. So it's just, I think life has a funny way of coming full circle sometimes.
Absolutely. Did you get to pick your initial portfolio or was it just life, like you just said?
That's a great question. I didn't. So I got a call the afternoon before saying, hey, would you like to come in and interview at ISITAP? Totally caught me off guard. So I spent the night researching, went in the next day. At the time, we were doing still in-person interviews. I know post-COVID now, almost everything's virtual. So I had the opportunity to meet with some leadership and then ultimately the director at the end. And he asked me if I had my choice, what region I would at least like to work in. And so I explained to him why I would be interested in working in the Western mm-hmm. Balkans and my ties there. And I still speak the language and that could be useful. And he managed to make it work and it was a good fit, I think, for a long time. I learned a lot. Before joining ISITAP, I did not have a lot of experience or background in law enforcement. And so the last 8 years have been tremendously helpful in that regard. And it allowed me to shed new light on post-conflict reconstruction and what that looks like and how important it is to look at rule of law and the justice sector in conflict affected countries in order to help them grow afterwards.
Thank you. Wonderful. I'm glad he listened, right?
Me too.
I mean, sometimes we don't think our higher ups are listening, but it's so wonderful when they do. And you're like, yes. Yeah. So you are now the Deputy Assistant Director for the ISITAP Global Programs and Women, Peace and Security Unit. What would you say is the most important thing about this role?
That's a great question. Also a hard one. I think that it's really been a privilege for me to step into this leadership position because now I have the opportunity to help oversee all of our programming in the global portfolio and play a role in shaping each project, both at the logistical level, which I was more involved in as a program officer, but also at a strategic level. And that's wonderful. I think for me, one of the most important parts is being able to step back and see the forest from the trees and see how each activity that we're working towards each month is helping us to achieve our overarching mission. But I would say the best part of it by far is getting to work with a lot of really incredible individuals, including the lovely ladies that are here with us today. And that I would say, if I could just give a short shout out to our assistant director, Heather Rausch. I think she's been one of the driving forces behind Empower since its inception. And I think I can speak for our whole team when I say that she's just a tremendous leader And she's empowered us all uniquely in our journeys here at ISITAP. And I would never have applied for this position of leadership without her. So we're really lucky to have her. And I think that representation matters. So it's great to see a woman like her in a position of senior leadership at ISITAP.
Thanks for bringing Heather up. She's wonderful. And I'm so lucky to have met her and all of you and to be able to work with you on occasion, supporting such a needed program. So you mentioned the advisors who are, some of the ladies are here, right? So why is their work important?
Their work is critical. I'd say we can't accomplish, Empower would be impossible to accomplish without them. They're incredible. They're extremely talented. Lynn has been with us from the very start of Empower, and they really drive what we're doing. And our cadre are subject matter experts in so many different fields. And they help us not only just deliver the training, but they're a true resource and mentor often to our international colleagues. And the law enforcement background that they bring to the table is a way that you can connect and bridge cultural barriers, especially on more sensitive topics like gender and equality.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you.
Nancy, I'd like to make a comment. One of the things that's very powerful about the Empower team is we're multi-generational. And as Ivana was talking about being in Bosnia as a young child, I was there in Bosnia working on the peacekeeping mission. So we span a lot of generations, but it works. And getting everybody's perspective is really, I think, really strengthens what we are doing.
Absolutely. Thanks, Lynn. Both of you mentioned this extremely great points, right? Diversity, inclusion. And now we're talking about going back in time, and history is essential, mm-hmm. right? Not to make the same mistakes, mm-hmm. to have continuity, to have SME, subject matter experts on a region, on the culture, on people, being able to speak languages, being from those countries and have that connection, being able to form that connection and being able to tell real stories about what you saw connects deeply with the police women that you ladies go provide training too. So thanks for making that comment, Lynn. Ivana, so let's talk about just briefly about the success of the program. How has Empower been received in the foreign countries that you have supported?
Great question. I think the program has been really well received, and that's what drives us day to day. We've met some truly incredible partners internationally, women and men, who share a similar vision about the role that women can play in the fight against terrorism and in law enforcement more broadly. So we call these partners our gender champions, and I know you'll hear a little bit more about them when the rest of the team talks, so I won't steal their thunder. But I would also say that we're not naive when it comes to the mountains we still have to climb in terms of barriers that still face women personally and professionally pursuing a career in the security sector. I don't think that's unique to our international partners. I think that's still true today in the United States. But when we're engaging in this type of training and programming, we have to keep in mind that in many cases, we're not just striving for organizational change, but we're trying to shift culture and shift mindsets about the role of women in society. So how do we achieve these cultural shifts? Where do we start? We look for opportunities to remove barriers where we can through our programs and our trainings. For example, if childcare is an issue, for instance, how do we address this? How do we make sure that when we look at our schedule or our trainings, how long we're training the women for the day, all that matters, right? We have to take that into consideration. We don't want to create more barriers for them as we're trying to train them in these different mm-hmm. issue areas. So I think that one of the strengths of our program, though, is that we don't have it all figured out yet, because challenges also present opportunities. And for us, that means creative brainstorming for mm-hmm. growth. And that's what we're focused on. So working towards that growth and towards that change. And we do it hand in hand with our partners. We're not doing it alone.
You mentioned something that is still happening here in the United States, right? The culture change of accepting more women in law enforcement. I mean, we also have our own challenges here.
Absolutely.
And solutions, right? Like the 30 by 30 initiative, Empower globally, and coming up with new ideas, innovating, thinking outside the box, right? And also, like you mentioned, it's being sensitive to the cultures. Mm-hmm. I remember being in Croatia and speaking to one of the ladies there, and well, most of them were the only females in their squads, right? Or in their units. And One of them mentioned to me, yes, even my family just said, why don't you just become an analyst instead of actually being carrying a badge and a weapon. Right. So the mentality still, it's different. I would compare it to like the 70s Hoover era for FBI, right? Women cannot be in law enforcement type of thing. So it's giant. I think we've made giant steps, but little steps, right? Like taking little steps to get to the big giant step. You mentioned earlier your cadre and to have a culture mind shift, right? And I think we mentioned it with Grace. We need men to be our champions as well. And not just in the classroom, but also as advisors. So ICTAP Empower also is composed of men advisors, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yes. Our cadre of advisors have a range of expertise at the local and state and federal level, I think I mentioned. And we do think there's a great deal of value in highlighting women who have had tremendous careers in law enforcement, who have been leaders, who have worked on counterterrorism issues in particular. And for us, technically, in terms of how they develop and deliver trainings or how they mentor, not just the actual training, but like I said, how they go about it matters. And it demonstrates their leadership and is another way for us to model Empower's vision. But having said that, our cadre has to have men on the team. We can't achieve our goals without a diverse group of advisors. It would completely undermine our message that we're stronger working together. And that's what we're ultimately trying to achieve, I think. Diversity is essential for so many reasons. And so it's also something that we should always be examining and striving towards and improving upon. I don't think you ever reach like a goal of, okay, we're fully good with this. You know, we don't have to, we check the box. I think that we know how important it is for law enforcement agencies to be reflective of the populations that they serve. And in the same ways, we have to be mindful of that as well as we're developing our programs and building our bench. So diversity in age, like Lynn mentioned, in race, in religion, in ethnicity, in gender, in socioeconomic status, diversity in any background leads to diversity in thought and ideas and problem solving and helps us connect more with the individuals that we're meeting internationally. So I also think that having a diverse group of advisors and workforce in general helps discourage groupthink and allows for a lot more creativity and for critical thinking. And the only way that we can address some of the issues that we're grappling with if we're creative and if we have to think outside of the box for how to problem solve. So yeah, like I said, I think it's something we should constantly be reexamining, really looking at our policies, making sure they're in line with what we say is important to us, not just because it's the right thing to do, but also because it leads to a stronger and more successful organization as a whole. So representation matters. We've heard it said 1,000 times, but I think it's really true. And it's an area within federal government and law enforcement, in particular in the U.S., that I hope we consider to see growth and improvement in years to come.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. Thanks, Ivana. Is there anything that I may have forgotten to ask you or that you would like to mention?
No, I think that Empower has been successful so far, but we've only just scratched the surface. I think that the reason for our success has a lot to do with the people involved. I think our senior leadership team at the CTAP has been incredibly supportive of Empower since its inception. Our colleagues like Grace at the Department of State's Bureau of Counterterrorism, her predecessors, her leadership team, without whom there'd be no funding put towards any of these great ideas that we've been throwing out. I think the messaging is clear from the highest levels of both DOJ CTAP and State CT's office about the importance of women, peace, and security programming. And I think that's a massive shift in how we've been doing foreign assistance, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. On our team, I think we work really closely together, which is great, on the program development and implementation processes. And we're constantly leaning on each other, make sure we're tapping into all of our resources. And I think ultimately our passion is what drives us. I think you mentioned it earlier, and I'm sure you'll hear it from the team as well. Because yes, it's our job to do what we're doing. But if we do it right, you know, our daughters and sons and granddaughters and everybody will know that they can have a meaningful role to play in the fight against terrorism or whatever they choose to pursue, protecting children internationally, whatever it is. There are barriers, but there's no reason that we cannot work to eliminate those barriers so that we all have equal access to those opportunities. So yeah, that would be it from my end. Thank you so much and really looking forward to the rest of the conversation.
Thanks, Ivana. You made outstanding points. We should always strive to make a better world for the next generation. Ultimately, just, you said it, like, I want to leave a better world for my daughter. I want her to feel like she belongs. I don't want her to feel that she's any lesser because she's a woman. I want her to have the I can do it attitude. I belong here. I want to sit at the table, and I will sit at the table. So thanks for those comments that you made. After all, in the fight against CT and other horrible crimes that are committed against humanity, we, the law enforcement officers, the government officials, and you, anyone who is working for this mission is basically genderless, right? It doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman in this fight. You just heard the first segment of this three-part episode. You heard from Grace Mason and from Ivana Brennan, who are a tremendous power behind ECTAP Empower. Tune in next week for segment two. If you have any questions about this episode, please visit my website, Badass in Heels, where you can learn more about these five wonderful women whose mission is to ensure police women globally develop, grow, and succeed in their departments. Thanks for your support. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Tune in next week for segment number two.